Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We are brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And it is a regularly scheduled weekly episode where we are going to pick one board game. We're going to talk about how to play it. We're going to talk about some strategies you can implement if you play the game. And we're going to talk about how the game was designed. And so the game that we're talking about today is another game that I had the opportunity to play at Geekway. I had fun playing it, and our parents picked up a copy for themselves. They played it too, and they enjoyed it. And we just recently played it again, and now we're going to talk about it today. So, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
That game is Koi, designed by Bill Lasek and published by Smirk and Laughter Games in 2018.
All right. So just to give a short description of what Koi is about, in Koi, players are koi fish in a pond trying to eat the most dragonflies and frogs. Every round, players take turns playing their koi cards, which will turn and move the player's koi around the board. The cards can also place obstacles to change the landscape of the pond to hinder your opponents or help you reach more food. At the end of the round, points are scored. Players get 3 points for each dragonfly they eat and 1 point for each frog they eat. And after 7 rounds have passed, the player with the most points wins. So it's a pretty simple game. Essentially, you're dealt these cards at the beginning of every turn. You start the game with a number of cards, depending on how many players there are. And then every turn afterwards, you're dealt three. And these cards will either have arrows on them that indicate how your koi moves if you were to play that card on your turn. Or they'll have a little illustration of a natural feature, those features being rocks, lily pads, which dragonflies will spawn on at the beginning of a turn, frogs, which will eat dragonflies off of lily pads, or they can just be eaten themselves for 1 point, or cherry blossoms, which can push things around in the pond.
Right, yeah.
At the start of the game, we can get a little bit more into how the game is played here. At the start of the game, you each player places their fish at the edge of a board closest to them. There are specific zones where you put your fish depending on how many players there are. It's all illustrated in the rule book. They have like charts. So if you're playing like a three-player game, the board is a six-sided board. So there would be like three sides, each spaced one apart from each other, designated for each player. So you'd place your fish on the edge of the board. You orient your fish when you place it to face one of the sides of the hex that it's in. And for the rest of the game, you will not be able to just freely change the direction your fish is facing. Your fish will only change direction if a card that you play allows it to.
Right.
So from then on, you start playing your cards.
Right. So let's go into what the cards actually kind of look like.
Okay.
So every movement card has a koi fish on the bottom that shows which order you do the actions on the card in. And then from there, it will have a number of arrows that can either be pointing straight, which means you move the fish forward one space in the direction it's facing. It can be like an arrow jumping out of the water. That means that the fish jumps two spaces forward in that direction. Mm-hmm. Or it can have a arrow sort of turning to the left, which means it turns to the left one side.
Or turns counterclockwise.
Right. Or the opposite direction as well is another arrow.
Right.
And then there can be a circular arrow. That means it can be freely rotated on its current space. And you do these from bottom to top on the card, as indicated by the koi.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two different colors of arrows. If it's a black arrow, then you have to do that action. And if it is a blue arrow, that action is optional.
So there's some cards where it'll be common to have maybe like a black arrow pointing forward, then two arrows pointing in opposite direction that would make you turn your koi one space. And those would be blue so that you can choose whether you want to turn left or right. And then another forward arrow. I think there's a couple copies of that card in the game.
Right.
But yes, but any card can have anywhere from 2 to 4 arrows on it.
Right.
And those arrows can be any combination of black and blue.
Actually, I had a card with one arrow.
Oh, yeah. Was that the turn?
Yeah. It was the right. free rotation.
The free rotation card or ability on one of these cards is one of the more powerful ones. So I think that's why they put that on its own card. I think that's the only card in the game with just one arrow on it.
Right. So earlier we mentioned one of the natural features are rocks or stones. Mm-hmm. And if a stone is in the water, your fish cannot pass through it. So if you had an arrow that pointed right toward or pointed forward and you were facing the stone, your fish would just bump off it and go nowhere. However, the ability that lets you jump over spaces, the arrow going out of the water, lets you jump over stones.
Right.
Right.
Another natural feature. So the game starts with a number of rocks on the board equal to the number of players. They're arranged in a very specific way from that chart that I mentioned earlier in the rule book. And also the game starts with a number of lily pads on the board arranged in a particular way. And at the beginning of every round, the lily pads will each spawn a dragonfly. And those are the things that you have to eat to get the points. And a lily pad won't spawn a dragonfly if there's something on it. So if there's already a dragonfly on it from the last round that nobody ate, if there's a fish on it because somebody ended their turn on the space, the same space as the lily pad after having eaten one of the dragonflies, or if there's something else on the lily pad, then nothing will spawn there.
Right.
Let's see. And then there's a couple other natural features.
I was going to say, when you move over this dragonfly, then you put it in next to your player, just in front of you, off to the side.
Yeah, you just keep it till the end of the round and then so that you can count it at the end.
Right. At the end of the round, these dragonflies are cashed in.
Right, for points.
But now, if you move into a space with another player, you get to push them to any of the six adjacent spaces and rotate them however you wish.
Right. You just kind of, disorient them.
Yeah.
It's like a racing game where you cause another car to spin out.
Yeah.
But you have total control over it.
Right.
There's a couple other features that will get added to the board from the koi cards. And those are, you can add more lily pads. That is one of the features that a koi card will allow you to add. Usually you want to add this near your own fish so that you can pick up the dragonfly that it spawns.
Mm-hmm.
You can add frogs, which we mentioned earlier. You can eat a frog to score 1 point, but a frog will also, when placed next to a dragonfly, will eat that dragonfly.
Removing it from the board.
Yes, removing it from the board, making it impossible to score that dragonfly. It will also, if it's placed next to a lily pad, every time that lily pad would spawn a new dragonfly, the frog will automatically snatch it off the board. So it kind of blocks off the spawn points.
Right.
So if there's one that your opponents are very nearby and, relying on scoring points from, you can block off that source of points with a frog.
Right.
The you can place more rocks. There's a card that a koi card that when played allows a player to place 2 rocks on the board. And when it comes to rocks and lily pads, you cannot place them next to another feature of the same kind. So you can't place 2 rocks next to each other to make a wall. You have to leave a space between them. Same thing with the lily pads.
Yeah.
The rocks function like rocks. The last feature that you can add to the board is a cherry blossom. And when a cherry blossom is placed on the board, it will push everything in the 6 adjacent hexes next to it. It'll push all of the objects in those hexes 1 space away from it in a straight line. Not including rocks and lily pads. Those are stationary. But all players, all frogs, all dragonflies, and all other
cherry blossoms, you're right,
will get pushed 1 space away. If they bump into something, then there's a whole chain reaction that could happen. If a player is bumped into a dragonfly, or a dragonfly or a frog is bumped into a player, then that player will just automatically eat them.
And if a cherry blossom hits another cherry blossom, the other cherry blossom it hit will then activate after moving.
Yes, as if it had just been placed as well.
Right.
So this can lead to a lot of interesting interactions and chain reactions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's basically everything there is. Oh, there's one more important thing in this game, and that is the weather card. So the game takes place over 7 rounds. On the first round, you don't draw a weather card, but every round thereafter, you will draw a weather card and activate it. And the weather cards will implement, they'll either like do something interesting with components on the board. Maybe they'll add components on the board. Maybe they'll take some away. But usually what they do, maybe they'll move them around. Usually they will give players a few extra movement options or one extra movement option for the turn.
Or some sort of ability. Yeah.
There's some sort of ability. So like, for example, there is one where it said you could just discard any card in your hand to jump once to jump forward, which means to skip the first jump over the first space and land on the second space in front of you.
Right.
One time I played, there was a weather card that said whenever you're facing a rock, you can jump over it for free.
Yeah.
So the weather cards will affect your options during a turn, and those are revealed at the start of a turn. So you can't really plan ahead for what a weather card will do. You just have to adapt to what happens with a weather card on your turn. So let's talk a little bit more about strategy and how to win in the game. Matthew, you won the last time we played. Mm-hmm. Is there any tips and tricks that you surmised that you could share with our listeners?
Let's see. So it felt like if the choice is to either save cards for the next round or to just get a whole bunch of dragonflies this round but have like one card in your hand at the end of the round, it feels like it's better to just get the dragonflies now and not worry about saving cards.
Right. It seems in this game like so much can happen between your turns that you can't plan for, like people placing obstacles or pushing dragonflies around
or
weather effects, that it's best just to go for the points when you see the opportunity.
Right. Yeah. And in this point, I do want to say that just as general card evaluation, the best movement cards are the ones that can move you at least 3 spaces in that card. And it might be worth it to hold on to one at the end of your turn, just so that you have like an option on the next turn to help you get somewhere.
And when you say move 3 spaces, do you mean like
move forward 3 spaces?
Move forward 3 spaces. Yeah. So either having 3 forward arrows or 1 forward arrow and 1 jumping arrow.
Right. Or anything more than 3 spaces. Like I think twice last game I had 2 cards I had a card that was just move forward 4 spaces.
Right, and we had to shuffle and use the used koi cards twice, so you were dealt that card twice.
Yeah. Yeah, so that way, like, at least having that escape option is pretty useful. Another good one is those cards that let you turn either direction, because a lot of times people would place rocks in front of you or in front of me. And having a way to just kind of ignore that is pretty useful.
Yeah.
You don't want to be stuck on a rock.
You don't want to be stuck in the corner.
Yeah, you don't want to be stuck in the corner either. So I wouldn't move into a corner unless you already have a way to turn around.
Right. There's some cases where a dragonfly might end up in a corner. But usually, like, if you do go for it, you want to end your turn at least facing the center.
Yeah.
Or with a plan to face the center next turn.
Facing the center or like at the at like an angle away from the corner or the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you run into an edge, you know what, you want to look sort of like at a 45 degree angle away from it. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Or you want to have a card in your hand that can do that for you.
Yeah.
Because if you end your turn facing a wall and then you don't have any cards in your hand to fix that, the next turn you might just not draw any cards that allow you to move away from the wall, and you might just be stuck there for a whole turn.
Right. You have to plan for the worst.
Yeah. How about frogs? Utilizing frogs. I think the main thing is that you don't want to trigger a flood if you plan to use frogs against your opponents.
Yeah.
Oh, so a flood is a rule that we didn't mention yet.
Right, that at the end of any player's turn, if there are no dragonflies on any lily pads, then you clear out all frogs and all cherry blossoms on the board.
And then is it no dragonflies on lily pads or just no dragonflies on the board at all?
I can check that real quick because I have the rule book. But in the meanwhile, go ahead and explain what the rest of it is.
Right. So when a flood happens, you take away all of the frogs and all of the cherry blossoms on the board. You just take them off. You push all of the players to the nearest edge of the board, and they get to choose which direction they face after they get pushed there.
It's
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's when the last dragonfly is removed from the board. Total.
Gotcha. Total. Okay, so when there's no dragonflies on the board at the end of a player's turn, then you push all the players to the edges, the closest edge. They get to choose exactly where they end up, because usually you're equidistant from a couple different spaces. The players also choose which direction they face after they get pushed. And then you fill the dragonflies back into all of the empty lily pads, which should be, you know, all the lily pads. And there won't be any frogs to block that because all the frogs just got swept off the board. So essentially you just push everyone to the edges and refill the board with dragonflies
right.
when a flood happens. So if you're playing a frog against your opponents, that means you're blocking their spawn. But doing so and then immediately triggering a flood afterwards, or having a flood trigger a bit later in that same turn, is counterproductive.
Yeah,
because your frog just essentially did nothing.
Right.
It didn't stop anyone from losing out on points.
Right. And at a base level, a frog is worth 1 point. Mm-hmm. And you can always just put it right in front of where you're going to move, even if you're only going to move one space that turn.
Right.
So, like, if you can't get any actual, like, denial of points, then the frog is just, you put it in front of you and eat it.
Right. Frogs are, I think, best utilized later in the game when some, like, dragonflies have been placed on spaces that don't have lily pads. So, like, sometimes dragonflies will be pushed off of a lily pad so that more dragonflies can spawn. And some weather effects will cause some dragonflies to spawn in random places on the board. So after some of that has happened later in the game, then it's best to use the frog to block spawn points near your opponents, because he's probably going to stick around because there's probably not going to be a flood for a while.
Right. Yeah. Also, I think frogs are worth doing if, like, there is one player in the lead who is near a lot of lily pads or dragonflies.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you don't think there's going to be a flood until their next turn. So, like, if they're right after you or second after you,
mm-hmm.
then that might be worth
definitely considering. If you can't find a good reason to use a frog against the person in first, it's usually best to just eat it yourself.
Yeah, right.
Or the person that would be in first, I guess, if you can kind of see that kind of thing coming.
Mm-hmm. It should be mentioned, by the way, that lily pads and rocks cannot be placed adjacent to each other.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Earlier rules.
Right, yeah, sorry.
But they can't be placed next to each other.
But that means that when you place lily pads, you probably want to place them about two spaces away from another pad, like two gaps in between the two, just so that the frog can't block both of them.
Right. Yeah, right, there is a chance where if a frog can neutralize two lily pads, then that's actually pretty valuable. Against a player in first who is near those lily pads, that's kind of like a 5-point swing against them, which is big. That's more than a dragonfly.
Right.
So let's see. I want to say that you want to try to be as creative as possible on your turn, and you want to, if, or another way of saying that is you want to make sure you examine all of your options, like the order that you play your movement cards, because if you can accomplish the same amount of points with fewer cards, then that kind of value will accumulate over time, and that's how you can win the game, is by using less cards to score the same amount of points.
Yeah,
because eventually you're going to have two or three extra cards that you can use to score bonus points.
Mm-hmm. In that regard, with cherry blossoms, I think generally try to have your cherry blossom do two different things at once. Mm-hmm. So, like, push a dragonfly and push an opponent's koi. Or, you know, push a dragonfly and push a frog somewhere else. That type of thing. Right. And if a cherry blossom hits a koi or a frog, and there's a rock, like, in front of that, in that direction, the dragonfly or the frog will bounce over it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can oftentimes just, like, steal frogs and cherry, or frogs and dragonflies from people just by putting a cherry blossom somewhere, having it shoot over a rock and over to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's useful to remember that if you hit a rock, that can be, I mean, you can utilize hitting a rock, because a lot of cards will force you to, like, move, turn, or turn, move, turn, move. But bumping into a rock means you can get, like, two turns off. Just kind of remember that. Sometimes you can use that to your advantage. But that being said, I think your best bet is to make sure that you're getting value out of all of the arrows on a given
right
card.
I wouldn't want to lose more than one arrow to a rock at, you know, at worst case scenario.
Unless doing so gets you a guaranteed dragonfly on that turn.
Because dragonflies are the most important.
Yes, dragonflies are your queen.
Yeah.
Worship the dragonfly in this game.
All right.
There's one last thing I have to say strategy-wise, and that is that most effects on a koi card will turn a player two turns to the left or two turns to the right. One or two turns to the left or right. One or two turns to left, right. So what that means is that the safest place for you to place a dragonfly in relation to an opponent is directly behind them.
Yeah.
Like probably two spaces directly behind them, because most of the cards will just turn them like one space to the left or two spaces to the left and then move them forward. So they'll have to like really circle around them if they want to get to that dragonfly that's directly behind them.
And most of the circular movement that lets you move freely or rotate freely, those are almost always at the end of the card.
Right.
From what I saw.
So that's pretty much the only guaranteed place where a dragonfly will be safe from your opponents. Now, if there is a rock in between your opponent and the dragonfly, remember that the dragonfly will leap over the rock if pushed into it. And so a rock actually helps your opponent in case they were to get a cherry blossom. So just one empty space away from your opponent directly behind them is the safest place for a dragonfly to be.
Yeah.
And that's all I have for strategy. So shall we get into the design discussion on
Koi?
Sure.
Let's do that.
So I think the first thing that I want to say before we get too deep into things is that I'm coming at this design discussion from more of a spike standpoint, because this game is not friendly to spikes.
Yeah.
I think the other psychographic of players, Johnny and Timmy, will be very interested with this game. I think there's a lot for both of them to latch onto here.
Right, yeah. Like, Timmy would enjoy moving a lot of spaces, and Johnny would like the puzzle that comes in just the mechanics.
Right, and both of those things can be very, like, gratifying in this game with certain weather effects and combinations of cards. I remember in one of the games we played, I mentioned there was a game where if you were ever facing a rock, you could jump over it. We got that weather effect in the game. And I was able to kind of like in chess, when you just like, or not chess, checkers, when you just kind of like leap all around the board, I was able to line up a bunch of rocks in a row and just leap all across the board in one turn. I think I only ended up getting like one dragonfly for the turn, but it was a lot of fun just doing something like that.
Yeah.
So the game is great for that, for those kinds of experiences. But for a spike, this game just has so much randomness to it that it's very hard to actually outplay other players.
Mm-hmm.
Not only, I mean, there's randomness for you and for them, to the point where, like we said, that the safest place for a dragonfly to be is like two spaces behind a player, directly behind them. But if there's a dragonfly anywhere else in relation to that player, at least two spaces away, they can probably get it on their turn.
Yeah. But even then, it's not guaranteed, though.
It's not. Yeah, it's, I mean, but like, even just like turning somebody like to face a different direction might not have any impact on whether or not they can get a dragonfly in this game.
Right. Yeah.
And likewise, somebody just placing one small obstacle in your way can totally shatter your whole plan. I would assume that part of being a spike is liking to plan ahead.
Yeah.
And having that plan set in stone. And like in this game, if somebody just puts a rock in one specific spot, it can like ruin your whole plan.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And and it's that like there's not a whole lot of counterplay because your options for getting around it are almost entirely randomly dealt as well.
Right. So I want to take a step back and kind of theorize how this game was put together.
Right. I also want to take a step back in a similar fashion.
Okay. So I imagine that the way that this game was actually designed, this is just total speculation, but I imagine that they started with like the hex board, and they started with the assumption that you wouldn't control which direction your piece faced, and they came up with this system where you would play cards that would move your piece in relation to where it was facing on a hex.
Yeah.
So they came up with a system, and they maybe they had the idea, the theme in mind then. Maybe they came up with a theme a little bit later with the fish and the dragonflies and stuff like that. But then they just added a couple obstacles to the game, and now they have the full game, which is kind of like this puzzle game where every round each player is trying to solve a puzzle for themselves.
Right.
From there, you would think that, let's see, where do I want to go from there? So when they added the obstacles, they added the ability for players to place these obstacles, which is, I think, a good idea, because that's saying like you're solving puzzles, but you're also complicating the puzzles for your opponents, which is the counterplay in this game. And it's right. Indirect because the obstacles will affect you as well if you are supposed to go over there, which is a good thing. People love indirect interaction like that.
Right.
But the problem that this game has is that the action that you use to place the obstacles is the same action that you use to move your own koi fish. And in this game, there's just too big a disparity in the overall effective point values of either action. Like being able to move your koi is worth so much more than placing an obstacle somewhere on the board.
Yeah. Or sometimes even negative if it's like a dragon or a lily pad that you're placing.
Mm-hmm. Because if you place a lily pad, that's not going to get populated until the next turn. And even then, like, it's not guaranteed that you'll get it. Maybe your opponents can snag it away from you.
Right. Yeah. But so I want to take another step back and ask what the point of randomness in a game is.
Ooh, okay. So, I like that.
So nowadays, especially, having random elements in a game is a design choice. Like, you don't have to have random movement or something. I picture that when they put in random movement, it was to keep the game from being the same every time. Because if you could move however you want in this game, there would always be a clear optimal route. And for the most part, everybody would move the same way, given that choice again. So randomness in a lot of games, and how I imagine this game was, is usually to spice things up, to provide different options and therefore different challenges, while making sure no two games play out exactly the same. Now, the problem, like you said, is that the random outcomes are not weighed properly. Mm-hmm. To a point where there is a big chance that like one person will just get such a better outcome, and that can change the entire rest of the game. There's times when you can have like a lucky roll per se, like that's sort of the point of press your luck games, but those games make those either less common, or they make it so that like there's ways you can get around that as the player who wasn't so lucky. But in this game, it is a very snowball effect, because for one thing, you can always save one of the lucky cards you got And so if you got like three really good cards, you could only use two of them to get 6 points and then save the last one. So the luck compounds itself sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Or additionally, say you get really lucky one round and get 9 points or 12 points like I did when we played. Then everybody else has to catch up to you. You can only get 1 point per turn. And even if the other the other players all get 6 points every turn, they still have to spend two turns to catch up to where you are. Just because, you know, and even then they're not even there because you have like 2 points already from like frogs.
Right.
I mean, even if the cushion you get,
even if you got 0 points on your turns, you can just save all of your cards, all of your good cards for two turns. They're probably going to have to spend literally all of their cards to catch up to you. And then by the time, you know, you're trying to turn around and get your lead back, you have 5 to 8 powerful cards in your hand, and they will have 3 randomly dealt cards.
Right. And this is also sort of like frogs are not that great at taking down the person in first because of the fact that the person in first usually just has better movement options or better ways to gather movement options.
Or so, like you said, they don't need to eat dragonflies since they're in first. They can just eat a frog
and
pad out their lead for a turn or so.
Right. So
they can just eat the frog that you played.
So when we played, everybody who wasn't in first was just eating the frogs they would place down because it gets them that much closer.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's also worth noting that like a lot of the movement options just negate the rocks or, like I said, negate the frogs to where the lucky outcome is good against the counterplay that the other outcomes give.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many ways to jump over car or over rocks or turn around them and stuff like that, that the player who has more movement cards will still be able to get through it no problem.
Right. So essentially what we're kind of talking about here is how the natural obstacles in this game are just not worth, like you said, they're imbalanced. They're not worth against the person in first the same number of points as just a good movement card is worth for you.
Right. Yeah. And so like, it's not that this lucky outcome becomes like an outlier that the players still have to work around and can work around. It's that this lucky outcome completely swings the game and is very snowball-y.
Mm-hmm. Right. In another game, like a card game like Magic, luck is, and randomness is usually implemented so that somebody that's in a worse standpoint, somebody who's less experienced at the game can still have the chance of taking down somebody who's more experienced at the game. But in this game, the experience comes from utilizing your cards to get a ton of points in a turn. And the only thing that luck does for you is it makes your turns worse in this game.
Right. Yeah. And likewise, points in this game are zero sum. That if you are getting a dragonfly, it means taking away a dragonfly from somebody else. So in a way, you can kind of picture eating a dragonfly as a 6-point swing.
Mm-hmm.
That you're getting 3 points and taking away 3 points from somebody else. So if I were to get 9 points in one turn, it's the same as not only getting 9 points, but taking 3 points away from every other player
mm-hmm.
that they can't get. So like, because it's a zero sum game in terms of scoring, and with the way the floods happen, when it's only at the end of somebody's turn and it pushes them to the end of the board, it's very hard for anybody to actually get more dragonflies than you if you eat the majority of dragonflies in a round.
Right.
So like, if 4 spawn on the board and I eat 3 of them, then there's only 1 left for one person, and then the next 2 people have to fight over the remaining ones, but like, I still have 3.
Mm-hmm. I have another example of how the randomness is punishing in this game. And this is less from a standpoint of like being in first or being in last, and more just from like your own personal value that you're generating for yourself. So this the skill in this game comes from using your pieces creatively so that you can use less cards to get the same amount of points. So that instead of using three cards to eat two dragonflies, you can use two of your cards to eat two dragonflies and save a card for a later round. But like we said, these natural feature cards like rocks and lily pads and frogs are worth significantly less than the movement cards that allow you to pick up more dragonflies, where essentially some of them, like especially lily pads and rocks, are just not like worth any points. Like people can just always deal with those and they're not going to affect you the turn that you play them. Usually they're not going to help you the turn that you played them. So if you can picture it like that, then every good move you make, which are kind of rare and are kind of hard to find, but every good move you make that gives you that card advantage because you are able to save a card since you got the dragonflies in less cards is just totally negated every time you're dealt a natural feature card.
Right.
Because and being dealt a natural feature card is something that you have zero control over. It'll just happen, and it just sets you back all that hard work that you just did. And if you aren't able to get any value, like we said, by using less cards to score more points, then just being dealt those natural feature cards is just a huge detriment to you.
Right. So to take a step back with like just the point of randomness in games, you don't want every player to be doing the same thing all the time, especially between sessions. So you don't want to just have one outcome and it's A. You want to have like A, B, and C, but you still want all of those to be equal, you know. You want all of them to equal similar points, just that they require different approaches to the game for the player. But in this game, it is weighed very heavily that they're not all equal in that regard. And I mean, I think it could have been fixed somehow.
I think if the natural feature cards also included some amount of movement to them,
that
might have fixed it. Like it's like place a rock, then also move one space or turn one way.
Yeah.
That would be helpful. Otherwise, if it were like the natural features were totally separate from the deck of movement cards, like you drew two movement cards and one natural feature every turn. But I think that would be a little more radical than just adding a little bit of extra help, just rebalancing the right. natural feature cards so that they weren't worthless. Although it should be stated that the cherry blossom natural feature is just as good as a movement card.
Yeah, it can be, definitely.
I mean, if you kind of think of it this way, by pushing your fish in a straight line, when you push your fish with a cherry blossom or another fish, but let's just use your fish for an example. If you push your own fish with a cherry blossom, it maintains the orientation that it was in. And so you can kind of picture that as turning to face that direction, moving one space that direction, and then turning to face the way you were facing before.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So a cherry blossom is essentially, it can be worth up to five arrows in itself. And that's not counting just how versatile it is. Like versatility is a pretty like powerful thing in games. And cherry blossom is super versatile because it could be a 5-point movement, like we just said, like a 5-arrow movement, but it could also be that plus it could push an opponent away.
It can move just a dragonfly two spaces. Yeah,
it can just straight up be used to give you 3 points, to give you a dragonfly. Like there's no movement card that's that powerful, I think. So cherry blossom is a super cool natural feature that I don't think needs to be rebalanced at all. I think that's a great card,
you know,
in the game.
You know, as we were playing, I kept thinking to myself how interesting the cherry blossoms were, more so than I was thinking about where to move my fish. Like I was much more interested in the cherry blossoms and how they worked, and eventually I was able to do like a cool combo with them
involved like pushing one cherry blossom into another and like setting the board in such a way that it kind of lined you up for like two points or something.
Yeah.
Or two dragonflies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cherry blossoms are super cool, but all the other natural features are subpar to just useless.
Yeah. So I want to talk a bit about complexity in games.
Okay.
So the cards in this game have no text, which mm-hmm. there's only a few different natural features. You know, we went over them pretty quickly at the start of this episode. But the first time we played this, or at least the first time I played this, we did not play the frogs accurately.
Mm-hmm.
We missed a rule about them. Basically, the rule that they automatically eat dragonflies. I don't know how much it would have mattered if we did that, because, you know, like we said earlier, frogs don't really make a huge difference. But the frogs don't have any text. It just has a picture of a frog. Or, like, the card that lets you place rocks just has two rocks on them. They're kind of overlapped. I wonder if it would have been better to have the text on some of these. Because, like, for one thing, not knowing the rule perfectly can lead to a hugely different game, which is true for most games. But, however, like, while there's only a few of these abilities, they all have, like, multiple rules to them or multiple facets to them, and even just having one of those rules on the card
mm-hmm.
would personally I think make for a much smoother experience.
Right. Like I think that this game was definitely designed to be more aesthetically pleasing, but that is kind of to the detriment of some of the rules.
Right. Yeah.
They did do a good job with the cherry blossom, if you don't mind referencing a rule book. Because they have a table in the rule book that goes over, like, what happens when a cherry blossom hits one object and makes it bump into another object.
Right, yeah.
They have, like, a whole spreadsheet of interactions to handle that, right. Which is, it's tedious, but it's the best solution that I think they could have gotten without just having, like, a whole extra table printed on, like, a card
that
you would set near the board.
It's at the least thorough.
Yeah.
In worst case, you can just have that page flipped open next to the board.
Here's one small thing, although it's not that small. And now this may just be me missing something in the rule book, but as far as I know, the only place in the rule book that states that a dragonfly is worth 3 points when you eat it is in the center of a paragraph in parentheses. So it's like a parenthetical in a paragraph in the rule book that tells you a dragonfly is worth 3 points. It'll say like – it says like the goal of the game is to move your fish around and eat dragonflies. In parentheses, dragonflies are worth 3 points. And that's like the only place in the rule book where it says that. And it's not
– I'm going through the book right now and yeah, I don't see anything else.
Right. That seems like a huge misstep. Like if you kind of want to put your most important rules – in the most visible place, you know, like as a bullet point in bold.
At least not between two parentheses.
Yeah, between two parentheses nestled in a paragraph.
Yeah. Like parentheses are the things you use to show something that's not as like its own statement. Like that's mm-hmm. That's the whispery punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of just easily glance over those anyways.
So, Matthew.
Yeah.
We've given a lot of criticism to this game, but I do think it would be fair to re-examine this game just briefly from a different standpoint, because I think this game is a pretty neat game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has a lot going against it for somebody who wants to, you know, win the game and outplay their opponents. Yeah. But for somebody who's just in for like a gaming experience, it's a decent game. Like the system of movement is pretty unique,
mm-hmm.
and intuitive, and it can be pretty satisfying when you figure out your movement for a turn, and you're able to score a bunch of dragonflies.
Right. I think there is something to be said about like the thematic concept of. Like everything in the garden or in the pond interacts with each other
mm-hmm.
and you know, you can push things away and things can push you away. Like there's the theme of the game puts kind of everything at an even playing field except for the mm-hmm. dragonflies. But yeah.
And I think I just think that like, as if you're not the person who's super intent to win and feels those like those small losses in the game where you're dealt bad cards and you do very little. This game can be pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, like we said, for like a Timmy and a Johnny, or is it a Jimmy and a Tommy? No, it's a Timmy and a Johnny.
Yeah, or Tammy and Jenny.
Tammy and Jenny. There's a lot in this game there's a lot that this game can offer you in terms of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of it's still fun. I think if you're okay with all the randomness, this can be a pretty fun game.
I picture this game very similar to Catan now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of the people that enjoy Catan would probably enjoy Koi as well.
Yeah, it's Catan without dice, with just this deck of shuffled cards,
and without engine building and without trade.
You get the idea. If you're okay with the kind of randomness that is in Catan, then you're probably okay with the kind of randomness that's in this game.
Yeah.
And then instead of the social aspect, it's a puzzle solving game,
right?
And you get to stretch your creative thinking muscles,
and you get to take that on people sometimes.
Yeah.
But
it's a neat game. The components are pretty good.
It's fitting that
how they interact is very cool.
It's fitting that it's a game where you have to go with the flow.
Yeah. And I guess with that, we will call it the end of our episode. So that is our episode on Koi. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you'd like, you can follow us on social media at BG Broscast on Facebook and Twitter. We post updates there. You can shoot us some messages. If you have a request for a game that you'd like us to check out, you can hit us up there. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes posted and tagged. So if you're looking for a specific episode, you can find the tag for it on our website, and that'll direct you to the episodes that we talked about, certain games. You can also find a link to our TeePublic store there. That's tpublic.com/user/bgbcast, where we have merch with our cool logos. If you have an idea for something you want to see our logo on, please let us know on social media. You can follow us on any podcasting platform. Like us, leave us a comment. We really appreciate it. And I believe that does it for BG Bros plugs, so let's hear it for Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream usually on weekdays from 11 a.m. Central Time to 2 p.m. Central Time. I play a lot of different video games, a lot of platformers, roguelites, competitive games, fighting games, you name it. Recently, I played a game called Katana Zero. That was really interesting. And now I'm playing an exploration game called Gato Roboto. And also through there, you can find a link to a Discord server where you can chat with both of us, as well as other watchers of the stream / listeners of the podcast. And also, I write articles on the BGBcast website under the Episodes and Articles tab. My current article up there, my most recent one, I mean, is an article about Enter the Gungeon and the way it mixes flavor and mechanics. And I swear I am working on the next one. I have just been preoccupied with a very large analysis that is very, very in-depth. So I will be sure to announce when that's done, but it will definitely take a while.
All right. That does it for Matt Plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening.